The opinions expressed in our talk shows are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Can't say my own name. We're moving so fast in here. It's Defy and Hustle Radio, and I want to welcome everybody. I have another great guest here in the studio with me this evening, and we're going to get right into it because he is a busy man, and so, but he's still here, and there's a lot that you need to hear as listeners in the Greenwich community. He is running as the Republican state representative candidate for Connecticut's 151st district. Welcome, Harry Arora. So, thank you.
Thank you so much, Noreen. Thank you for having me, and a warm hello to all your listeners.
You're running all over the place, right? The election's next Tuesday, the 21st?
That's correct. It's a special election on January 21st, next Tuesday, and it has necessitated because our state rep for 151st, Fred Camillo, is now our new first electman. So as a result, that vacancy was created, and hence we have this election. It's a special election, so not too many people know about it, and so it's very important what you're doing, and I really appreciate you bringing me on the show because we need to get everybody to know that, hey, listen, it's a special election. Come out, exercise your democracy, your rights and obligations of democracy, and please vote.
And you can go right to the places where you always vote.
That's correct. The same polling places. Schools will be open. Schools actually will be open, but nevertheless, the schools have made arrangement to make sure that there will be the polling facilities available and arrangement so that there is no interaction between the students and the folks who are going to go poll or cast their votes.
Okay, so Harry, because we have a limited time, I wanted to start to get into your background and what eventually brought you over to, I know you've run for other positions, but what's
right,
making you want to run for this position at this time? But why don't we start with your background? You run an investment company right now here
That's
in
correct.
Town.
That's yes. correct. So I'm a private sector person. I have run an investment company in Greenwich since 2006. I am raising a family in Greenwich. Mm-hmm. My wife and I, we have three kids we are raising here, and they were born in Greenwich Hospital, and this is the only community our family has always ever called home. Now, I myself grew up actually in land far away in India. And I came to this country as a student. I came to America as a student 27 years ago with a lot of hopes and a lot of ambition. And I'll tell you, in this country, I got all the opportunity and the ability to reach my dreams. And look here, I'm living in Greenwich, Connecticut, raising my family in Greenwich, Connecticut, a town like no other. I would say it's one of the best things ever, towns ever in the entire world.
Agreed.
And I am so excited to have had the opportunities which I've had in my life. So at some point, 20 years after running my business, I was reflecting, and it has always been my desire, growing up with very little, to actually give back and advocate for our community. So at one point, I asked my wife, there are always natural breakpoints in careers. Listen, you know, I want to seek another purpose. I want to go into public service and help others who may not have had the opportunity, and help our entire community. I want to make sure that the opportunities I got are available to everyone, my children, our children, and every single person in the community. So I made a shift from investment management to public service. And that was a few years ago. And my wife said, well, if you do it with your whole heart. Don't do it half-heartedly. And so I ran, as you mentioned earlier, for U.S. Congress a couple of years ago. And now I'm running to be your state rep for 151st. That's why I seek your vote and your support.
When I went on to, I did a lot of research on you, so be a little nervous. I have a lot of research on you. But just going into your website, you say you're running on new ideas, new energy, and thought leadership. You do have an investment analyst background. We were talking about it because I come out of the investment banking industry as well.
Yes.
And so you call yourself a problem solver. You say you want rigorous analysis, honest discussion, and you are pro-growth.
That's right. That's right. You actually have indeed done great research.
Well,
I hope you know we can have our residents really go through our platform. So I am running to take leadership to Hartford. Here in Greenwich, we are leaders. We are leaders in all areas: in business, in finance, in medicine, in arts. You know, if you go around town, this is a town of leadership, full of leaders and very accomplished folks. Mm. And we have to take that leadership to Hartford. What that really means is we need to find a set of policies which are going to work for everyone and which are going to reverse the current course Connecticut is on. So as you know, Connecticut is only one of three states which has not recovered all the jobs and is not up to the point in the economy where it was in the last recession in 2007, before the last big recession in 2007. And that's not something just happened to us. That's something which we have brought upon us by a choice of policies of what I call anti-growth policies. We have over-regulated, we have overtaxed, and we have wastefully spent a lot of our money. And that's what I'm going to do in Hartford, given your mandate, given the mandate of our district. Go up there and launch a vision for growth for Connecticut. And that is, I'm going to do that in caucusing with the Republicans up in the state and say, listen, we have to articulate a vision for Connecticut and turn the state around.
Going along with what you just said about the state of Connecticut, I did a little research and I was looking at the U.S. News and World Report, and it's as of August of 2019, so recent. And I was looking at the rankings of Connecticut in all your basic areas: healthcare, education, economy, infrastructure, opportunity, financial stability, crime, and natural environment. And Connecticut comes in 46th out of 50. This is to the negative. 46th out of all 50 states in the United States for fiscal stability, they're 46th, and for infrastructure. We come in 30th for economy, and we come in 33rd for opportunity. I wanted you to talk to something you said about fiscal discipline. You said Connecticut has a spending problem. We have a bloated bureaucracy, and our spending is inefficient and wasteful. Can you speak to that?
Yes, indeed. You know, you're hitting on all the right notes right in out there. You're right. We have a bloated bureaucracy and we have a spending problem. Now, the reason we are lagging in so many fronts, whether it's the economy, whether it is, as you mentioned, our transportation, our infrastructure, is because we have a set of policies which are anti-growth and which do not attract investment. We are not friendly to business. As you know, we had GE, which leftover squabbles over things which policies which were implemented at the state level. We had as I would say, hubs of industry which never crystallized. And when I say that hubs of industries, for example, our county here, the area from Greenwich all the way up to Westport and Fairfield, is a very strong hub for investment management. And we have had this great opportunity to make this a big cluster so that all investment management companies come here. But we have really squandered that opportunity. Similarly, we know that insurance was always, Hartford and insurance are synonymous terms. But right now, that's not the case. We have not been friendly. We have not encouraged the industry. And as a result, the industry is kind of going away to other places. Same thing with medicine in New Haven. So we have some very significant natural advantages where we can attract investment, work with business leaders, and say, what do we do on a policy level so that you can really get more critical mass and be leaders, or we are leaders in that area with as a state. On the contrary, what we have done is basically gone at those firms and those businesses and said, how can we take more out of your revenue stream, out of your profits, and make sure that you know, and then spend it unwisely. Mm-hmm. And businesses have a lot of choices. They have other states are coming and have poached on them. Other states have said, well, listen, if Connecticut is not friendly to you, we will be friendly to you. And that's why you see a lot of these businesses move out. Similarly, for residents, it's the same story. Our state has created taxation policy as well as many other, just what you said, underinvestment in the transportation, which makes life difficult for many of our hardworking citizens. Just look at the current recent laws being passed. We just passed laws which have increased taxes on dry cleaning. Now, we know dry cleaning and laundry services are used mostly by hardworking people who are going to work. And so what have you done? You have made life harder. And no other state, many other states, like New York doesn't have a tax on dry cleaning. It's just kind of a land grab. It's just one of those things where the state is trying to get dollars out of hardworking people and then they're not spending them wisely. And that is not a policy which attracts residents. And that's why residents are also finding ways not that once they have an opportunity, they go to other states. And so we have been able to take a very strong position, situation or hand which we were given because of the various hubs of businesses we have had and turn it into a situation where residents and businesses are leaving, and we have made it kind of compelling. We have compelled them, made a policy set or a business environment which they don't find friendly.
Okay. So I'm not a politician, although I'm having more and more politicians on my show, so I'm learning. But, I mean, it would seem self-evident if you want to bring in, for example, you were talking about financial industry managers, investment managers, to even just to Fairfield County. They're here already. But if you wanted to grow that, or even insurance, whatever the industries you just talked about, it would seem that you would incentivize them to come here. What? Why? Why are we not doing that?
And I wouldn't even say incentivize specific businesses or specific firms. What I'm saying is create a business environment which attracts firms and residents. And why we're not doing that is because we spend money unwisely at the state level, uh-huh. too much of it, uh-huh. and then we just need that money because we have already spent it. And then we go at firms and businesses and try to appropriate it from them. Uh-huh. So the real answer is you have to start with being prudent and efficient about your state programs. Mm-hmm. And I've studied these state programs in detail, and I'm having good discussions with various state leaders about it already as to how do we really restructure some of these state programs, find efficiency. And we're not talking about cutting down these programs mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. We're talking about finding 10%, 15% efficiency over 4 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what we're saying is what our party, what our vision is, that if we work diligently through these programs, the transportation programs, the healthcare program, the human health services, we will be able to find efficiency 10 to 15% over years, over a few years, 3% a year. Mm-hmm. You know, in business, you have been in business, Noreen, yourself, you know that finding 3 to 5% efficiency when you haven't really invested in technology or looked for that mm-hmm. over in decades is not that difficult either. And when you get that savings, when you get that efficiency, you apply it to making the tax code, to making better or easier for both businesses and residents so that they find more reason to be here. And also the regulatory front. Let's not go out there and make regulations so difficult that businesses say, well, you know, we're not going to be here. There goes a saying that the number of lawsuits from the attorney's office in Connecticut is very notorious for or very well known for really going after businesses all the time. And that's another thing. Sometimes you do have to go after businesses to make sure that they're fair. But many times you have to make sure that you sit down with businesses and understand what's driving them and resolve things across the table. So what I'm saying is that it is the choice of policy which has made the state inefficient. It is the inefficiency which has made our policy business unfriendly, and that is leading to this vicious cycle. And we can reverse that vicious cycle and make it a virtuous cycle. And how we do that is by finding efficiency, cutting taxes, making regulation more appropriate, making it robust, and then attracting businesses.
So what I'm envisioning as you're speaking is that, so you've been studying the big picture, getting a perspective on income, the money that's going out, where it's being spent and allocated, and whether it's where you think it might be used inefficiently right now.
That's correct. So, for example, think about our transportation programs. We spend $3.1 billion every year on transportation. And I think if you really look at that capital program, so half, $2.5 billion of it is on capital, building new things and really large improvements. And $600 million is on what we call maintenance, which is fixing potholes, even repaving, I think, partly goes into maintenance. And that's a small amount, or subsidizing our rail lines and so on and so forth. So now let's just put it this way. If we have problem with transportation repaving, that's a very small part. That's $600 million of $3.1 billion. So if we really have look into our capital program, we'll find there are too many projects which are not done well or have very low effectiveness. We all talk about, and there was, we have in recent times have pointed out, there's a parking garage which is being constructed with government capital. It's $60 million. The reality is parking garages can be very well built with private capital and are much better operated by real estate firms which would really raise the money and suitably maintain them and charge for these services. And so there is number of projects like that in the capital program which can either be shelved off to the private sector or which can be delayed or which can be implemented in lower costs. And so that's where the saving is. What is the current administration trying to do? They're saying, well, don't even touch that. As a matter of fact, we're going to do more of what we have done, more of this wasteful spending, more of those parking garages we're going to build with government capital rather than private capital. But let's put tolls and get some more money from you. Now, That's not right. You know, the tolls money is also going to come from hardworking residents of my district and of Connecticut. And so my viewpoint is, before you think about any new taxes, let's just get our spending in order. I don't think it's a – do you think it's really not a fair question to ask? Let's get the spending in order before we put on more taxes on dry cleaning or on tolls or on perhaps on digital downloads. Mm-hmm. You know, let's just first get our spending in order. Let's make our educational system more efficient. Let's make sure that we have the resources in the right place. I always use the term right capital allocation. Let's focus on that.
And some return, and then somebody checking, what is the return on investment?
Return or effectiveness. In this case, you know, we're not in private sector, so it's not a number in terms of rate of return, but it's a social return. Is it benefiting enough people? Are there any cost-benefit analysis being done? Listen, you know, you can always spend money and say, well, you know, it helped four people. Well, if a billion-dollar investment helps, you know, 40,000 people versus four people, you would choose the one which helps 40,000. And so what we want to make sure is that when we are making these large investments, I'm sure every single large investment is helping, you know, some folks. But the question is it efficiently done and helping enough? Can we go and do programs which are more effective and more efficient?
You win, right? So you win next Tuesday, you win, and you're starting the next day.
Yes, that's right.
What are you going to focus your attention on?
So my first action is going to be sit down with the Republican caucus and launch a vision for growth for Connecticut. Because we can't just make changes, especially in the current environment where we are not in the majority, by just talking about piecemeal ideas. What we have to do is show a concrete set of ideas and policy changes and ask our public, ask our voters, give us the mandate. Give us a majority, and we are going to implement for you a growth vision in a matter of 4 years. We are going to cut down taxes to the 5% level, income taxes. We're going to make sure business taxes are normalized. We're going to make a situation where it is compelling for you, if you have lived, if you like Connecticut, to live in Connecticut. We're going to make it worth your while, even if you're in adjacent states, i.e. the tri-state area, to come to Connecticut and make home here. We're going to make an offer which people in the tri-state area cannot refuse. And guess what? We believe that if we do that, in a matter of a few years, 3 or 4 years, instead of losing residents, we're going to start growing again. And how beautiful is growth? You know, have we seen, you know, whether it's when you've seen your child grow, when you see economy grow,
when you see
a plant grow, and we will see our state grow back again. That's the vision we have to articulate. And so the first thing would be to sit down with the leaders in Hartford, the Republican caucus, you know, put together that vision, the vision for growth, a plan for growth, and put it out to everyone, to all members across the state, and hopefully we get a mandate so that we can start growing again.
So this is how you're going to overcome the deep partisanship that may—I don't even know—it must be in Connecticut. It's everywhere. So you're saying you can win it over with good ideas.
Absolutely. And the other thing which I have to start doing right away is working for my community, what I call the block and tackle, getting more resources for our school district, especially for schools, for capital plan. Similarly, working to resolve any challenges which our residents will face, right? And getting more done in the New Haven line within the constraints we our budgets which we have. So there's that big picture leadership plan, and then there is what we have to do on a day-to-day basis, which is a responsibility a state rep has to all his 16,000 voters, or really all the 23,000 residents in this district.
I want to ask one more question. You can answer it as quickly because I know you have to go. But how transparency right now is so important. So you can, any politician could be out there now saying what they're saying. At the end of the day, the election comes and you're voted in. How do the people know? How will you be out there telling the people what's going on?
Well, yeah, I think that's why I'm here, and I'll be here more. So I'll sit down with you perhaps right after the election, and we will discuss these same things over when I am on the other side. And I think it's our role together, as yourself, as a journalist, and for us as politicians, to articulate and be accountable. And that's one thing which is not right now in place.
Yes.
We do not have accountability. My opponent has been talking about the same ideas that they're going to grow, but the policies that she's espousing are anti-growth.
Cheryl Moss, she was on the show last week.
And she may say, well, I would like the state to grow. I would like to create jobs. I would like to create green jobs. Well, but you're supporting a set of policy like tolls, etc., which are extremely anti-growth. So we have to make our policies consistent with our goals.
Very good. Thank you very much, Harry Arora. Good luck to you in the election. And folks, I'm going to go to break. I'll be right back. This is Noreen Ehrlich with Defy and Hustle Radio.
Well, if you're traveling the northbound Connecticut Turnpike, travel time from the state line in Greenwich up to Route 7 in Norwalk is 35 minutes. If you're traveling the northbound Merritt Parkway, it's a 22-minute ride from Greenwich up to Norwalk. Use your power to cure IBS and join the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation at Spin for Crohn's and Colitis Cures. Get started at spin4.org. I'm Jay Trelase, 1490 Traffic Center.
From the WGCH Weather Center.
Becoming mostly cloudy overnight tonight, a few showers late, 35, becoming partly sunny, windy and colder tomorrow, morning high near 40, then temperatures will fall, breezy and cold tomorrow night, partly cloudy, 15 to 20, and wind chill in the single numbers. Cold Friday, mostly sunny, 25 to 30, snow develops in the afternoon Saturday, 35, and partly sunny Sunday near 37. I'm meteorologist Aaron Zochman on 1490 WGCH.
What if I told you I could change your life in just 100 days? This is Noreen Ehrlich from Defy and Hustle Radio. I'm an executive coach based in Greenwich, Connecticut. For over two decades, I worked as a CFO and leader in Wall Street's fast-paced private equity industry. I helped guide teams of professionals to improve their careers, grow their businesses, and still maintain work-life balance. Based on this know-how and my unique understanding of life's principles, I created a 100-day plan that will unquestionably up-level your life. Make 2019 your year. You can and deserve to have it all. Don't wait. Take advantage of my free 50-minute consultation by visiting my website at noreenerlich.com or calling me at 475-333-2173. Oh, that's Bob and I trying to work it out here in the studio. But this is Noreen Ehrlich. Welcome back to Defiant Hustle Radio. So, folks, so Harry had to run tonight. So what I figured I'd do, I'm not a politician. I'm, you know, far from it, although I'm learning more. I learned so much from each of my guests. But what I thought I'd do to get all of the political talk into perspective was to do some homework and share that homework with you. So I am a little bit technical. I do have that CFO background and I'll do my research and look at statistics and things like that. And I think that's always very telling because you keep hearing stories, for example, about this migration out of the state. You would think they were lined up at the line on at Portchester, but I was wondering just what is the extent of this migration and what is really at the heart of it, because this is a fantastic state. Take it from a woman who has lived in – I grew up on Long Island. I've lived in Summit, New Jersey, which is a lot like this. I lived in Stamford. Then I was in Atlanta. I worked in Tokyo. I lived in India. I used to work in Dubai. I used to live in Santa Monica. So I was so thrilled to get back to the Northeast. And it's funny, when you have experience elsewhere, you may think it's the grass is greener elsewhere. But when you come back, you really learn to value what is in the place you left in the first place. And so I did some homework. I'll tell you who wrote some of the pieces I'm reading and what periodical I got it from. But I did some homework on why people are leaving the state and who in the state they are. So I found an article. The author of it is Katie Hill, and it was a piece written just last month in December 2019. And Katie Hill is the editor of MarketWatch. And she starts out with winter is coming up north. She's objective, but she's saying more than half of the top U.S. states that people are planning to move out of are in the Northeast, according to LendingTree. The states that people are looking to escape from, they're escaping, are from New York, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, New Jersey, Delaware, and Rhode Island. But New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut landed among the top five from which people are moving out the fastest. And data from the Pew Charitable Trust suggests that while people may be all about moving south, where the population in the South, I guess, is growing, grew by 1.4 million in the last few years, or they're moving west to the Sunshine States, the population in the general Northeast is just considered sluggish. So she looked into it a bit, and she said the number one reason that people are packing their bags is because of high costs. So data released from the personal finance site GoBankingRates.com reveal that the number one financial fear people who live in the Northeast have is that they will live in debt forever. And the Northeast is the only region in the country where financial fear and fear of living in debt forever is the number one factor. They're worried. So there's a lot of fear in the Northeast that the cost of living here is just too much. As a coach, as a life coach, I do try to work with my clients who have fears around money to shift a lot of those fears internally, because I know this is oversimplifying it, folks, but when you can get a grip on your own fear of money, generally something does shift inside of you and starts to bring more money in. But it comes to a different level of putting yourself out there, confidence, finally taking some steps. But to live in fear of money, losing your money, is something I think we're all sort of conditioned to do, but it's about time we start breaking that condition. But that's me on the, preaching here. So the number two reason people are saying they're leaving is weather. And according to this article, it says that there's blizzards and there's the snowiest winter on record, and people are tired of it being cold and gloomy. But I'm not fighting with anybody who feels like they want to leave. Often when people leave a situation, they go in the opposite direction for a second, so they may run towards the sun. I happen to think that, A, it's not that cold in the winters anymore, or that snowy. It was 77 degrees last week on my birthday, and it usually does blizzard. But the Connecticut weather I find to be very wonderful and unique, simply because it is changing. You get. I'm not negating the fact that you have to drive in the snow and things like that, but you do get a change. You get the beautiful fall. You get this winter. It's uncomfortable at times, but it's a good time to really work hard and reflect a bit. And I don't think it actually snows that much. But then when the spring comes around, we really do go through a shift here where we come alive and then we enjoy our summers like crazy. Having lived in other parts of the country that were consistently sunny, yes, when you first get there, you appreciate it because it's sunny all the time and you come to life. Over time, and I lived in Santa Monica where it was gorgeous, and I'm not fighting the weather in Santa Monica, but at some point, you miss the fact that you don't want to work that much anymore. You just want to be out having a good time. And I do like the Northeast because I think we're some of the most industrious people here. And some of that comes with a certain amount of grind that we're putting into the work. But that's why we're also incredibly productive. And as Harry Aurora was just saying, my guest here, we are the brains of the country, I feel, with a few other cities in mind. So I think if you can, take another good look at the weather and reconsider that. The other reason people are leaving is, of course, and this is a big one, because of jobs. And, you know, this is something that, as Harry was talking about, we have to figure out, because I was just out in Phoenix. There's a lot of growth out in Phoenix. They have a lot of land that they can deal with that we're very built up here in the Northeast. And they had some time maybe to think over how they would attract people there. We're in a more stabilized state, and we are going to have to do some element of rebranding with our message about what makes Connecticut great, and it is a great state. I did look at the another article, which is from the U.S. News and World Report, and it was dated in August of 2019. And the author of this is Deidre McPhillips, and she's the data editor at U.S. News and World Report. And she calls Connecticut the land of steady habits. She starts the article, in Connecticut, the land of steady habits, the latest habit is to leave. She says between 2014 and 2017, Connecticut lost about 21,000 more people than it gained and is the number 42 state in terms of net migration. So she gets into the reasons why she found that people were leaving. And the article is actually specifically about some of the people, maybe outside of the Fairfield County region. I'm sure there's many within the Fairfield County region that are truly struggling with the with the inability to thrive on a day-to-day basis. And so she was talking about the people who are leaving the state are generally people who are just coming out of college or people that are retiring. So for the people in the center there, they may actually really like the state and enjoy the state, but they're having trouble making a life for themselves. And so one of the ways Connecticut is trying to deal with this, she talks about, is putting in something that's like a mansion tax to try to redistribute the income. She said the top 1% earn more than 37 times the rest of the population in the state, according to the Economic Policy Institute. And so despite having one of the highest median households in the country, there is an incredible amount of inequality in the state of Connecticut that we here in this in Greenwich and in the Fairfield County region may or may not realize. But there's a new property tax provision that's supposed to take effect in 2021, that was passed by the state legislature to start to tax mansions, they're calling them mansions, for people who sell their homes for more than $2.5 million. Those people that sell their homes for more than $2.5 million will pay a 2.2% fee on any portion of the sale above that $2.5 million, in addition to some lower fees already in place based on the balance of the sale. So, she was pointing out that whether that was driving people out of Connecticut, driving the wealthy out of Connecticut with this mansion tax. I do think that New York has something similar to that, but the idea was to make it a bit of an exit fee. If you do want to leave and you're well-to-do and you do want to leave, that there would be some sort of exit fee and that there would be a redistribution among from the wealthy to the less wealthy. So in 2018, 276 homes in Connecticut sold for $2.5 million. So that puts it in perspective, only 276 homes. And I think that's declining now as the home prices really drop. And so what she determined after speaking with some of the realtors in some of the higher end neighborhoods was that more than 30 homes were listed, or she spoke with one realtor and who said that more than 30 homes listed for more than $2.5 million in Connecticut were listed for more than $2.5 million in Connecticut. So I apologize. More than 30 homes were listed for more than $2.5 million in Connecticut. But the realtor said not one client has mentioned the new tax provision to her. And the agent, the real estate agent, said, this won't stop people from buying a home of their dreams or creating the life that they want. It just won't stop them. If they want to leave the state, it won't stop them. And if they want to stay in the state, it won't stop them. So that's the new mansion tax in Connecticut that's trying to redistribute income from the wealthy That's one of them. And to the less wealthy, and also something that's trying to dissuade the wealthy from leaving. I did also find something that was written in Patch. It was an article written by Brian McCready, and he's pretty cynical, but he says people do go, come and go for a variety of reasons. Job change, retirement, a family member falls ill. In Connecticut, most residents come for the jobs and ironically leave for jobs. So we're uniquely a state that a lot of people want to come to work and will come here to work and raise their families. But it's also a state where people are not finding employment or are being enticed to find employment. For example, in a place like Phoenix, where there's new businesses coming in, there's new initiatives underway, and they can get lower cost housing. He, in this article, Brian McCready, the author, said it wasn't necessarily, the mainstream people aren't necessarily leaving for the reasons that we might talk about, such as the state's crippling debt. I don't think they think that they're affected by that. They're leaving because there's something that I think they think is uncool, unsexy, maybe even a little bit unfun, because when you go into other cities, and those of you who travel certainly know, these other cities have new initiatives in place, they have new housing in place, so this is going to attract younger people to leave Connecticut. And that may be something we just can't compete with until we put something in place here that makes people think that they can work and live and do something like what is happening down at Harbor Point, for example, in Stanford. I do think Stanford's really taken a lead. It's taken a little while, but now it really seems to be taking off, where there's a place that people want to go and live and work and be by the water and be around people who are young and up and coming. So according to this article by Brian McCready and Patch, he spoke with moving companies, the National Movers Study, conducted by United Van Lines and published in January of 2019. And they found that people coming inbound into Connecticut were coming here to raise their families. 27% of the people that were moving into Connecticut were moving here because it's a great state to raise your family. And
that's all about the education system.
And that is about the education. Well, it's got a lot of reasons. I mean, I've been talking a lot, Bob, but you can think of a lot of reasons why people would come here to raise their family, I think.
Well, that makes it different from other places, though, I think, is particularly the education. The housing, we have our issues. For instance, if you end up buying a house that's $2.5 million or more, well, somebody's going to get taxed, apparently, as you were just saying. Housing is expensive.
Yeah. That is the primary block that, even though the irony of the houses, you know, like backcountry houses, but expensive houses, homes, I should say, are dropping in price pretty precipitously. But to come into places like Fairfield County, it also costs a lot of money. So you have to have a good job in order to work here in many cases, and hopefully that's changing.
Quite often that means working in New York City.
And working in New York City.
Yeah, because those jobs don't necessarily happen right here.
Well, you know something?
And this is why I think you see the young people leaving, because there aren't jobs for them to start at.
I wish I had more understanding, because don't you just take the train?
Yes. Yes.
And go to New York City. But I know I'm oversimplifying it, so I wish I understood better. But
getting started out of college is it's very difficult if you're living here.
Well, okay. I'm not going to.
I mean, eventually, if you've got the job in New York City, now you can think about, well, let's move into Fairfield County that's nearby, and we'll take the train into New York City to work. But you got to have the job first, apparently. or be willing to live a much lesser lifestyle.
I mean, that's but
like me. No.
Well, but this is the way it goes in places that are desirable, and often places that you get great experience, like New York City.
Mm.
When you got to, in some ways, I know I'm not addressing the problem head on, but you do have to pay to play. If you go to work in New York City and you learn like I did I learned investment banking in Manhattan, so I got international experience. I worked with some brilliant minds. If you just go. So you can take that experience and you sort of keep paying to be in the New York City area, because this is where you gain, in my opinion, experience that should have you making more money down the road. So in the short run, in some ways, you're still going to school. You're still paying to play. You're still working hard. But once you gain that experience, you should be head and shoulders above a lot of other people nationwide. So it's something to consider, but I'm sure, you know, young people, they also have to leave and go see the world. So in many cases, they have
That's
to get out
point.
And see things.
So, some of the people leaving that are, say, just out of college and trying to get started, it could be partly that, geez, I'd like to go someplace different. I want to see what it's like in other parts of the world,
other parts
of the country.
You have to go see something different, because otherwise, how do you know what you're just going to be attracted? How do you know what you like and don't like if you don't experience something different? Yeah. But I'm sure that if I don't know who would do this, if it's a government issue, initiative, or other people, but I'm sure if we put our minds to really figuring out what people want, there must be something we can do to start to keep our well-educated students and young people here in the state.
Keeping business here that could hire them would be, I think, an important step, which means to me less taxation of the businesses.
I would have to think so. I just find it interesting because I have my own business and I work with a lot of people. Some of them are younger, especially on the digital marketing side of my business.
Mm.
And they're not – many of them are working from home part of the time. They're working – the company I use, this company, it's called Tribal Vision. It's based out of Rhode Island and Boston, and they have people that are not having to even go into an office anymore, or it's the exception, or it's part-time, and then other times they're working from home.
Mm.
So I'm curious, because younger people aren't necessarily – coming out of school and saying, I want to go work at a big corporation.
That's a good point.
So I don't want to overspeak on this topic. I do.
But you do have experience to lend to the conversation.
Well, it is interesting that, first of all, I'm working in Connecticut and I'm working with a variety of companies. I do work with some people locally, but I am working, now that I pointed out, with the company that's based out of Rhode Island in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And the gentleman who's my primary account leader on my digital marketing is based out of Brooklyn. So,
okay.
And then he just left the firm to go start his own firm, and he's 25 years old. So,
whoa.
I do think that there is such a paradigm shift that's taking place in so many things, but one thing is with young people, and I'm not sure who's taking the lead to understand if people are leaving after school. I'm sure somebody is, and I don't know.
So
but
it sounds like you're saying the independent contractor approach is
the small
is
business.
Working.
Even some of the small businesses, not just in Connecticut but domestically, are being started by people in their 40s, are being started by women who have finished raising their children, for example, and are now going into the workforce. There's a different paradigm that's not just based on corporations. Now, I realize you can't tax everybody in a small business, but if you want people to stay, there must be ways to do it. And I do think places like Harbor Point and Stanford, or at least that's where I see it most, close by, where they're starting to really have corporations that are there in Stanford.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure that they have a lot of small companies that are branching out of that. And they can find homes and be by the water and have a thriving downtown. And and that's that. And that's why I think it's working in Stanford. So I'm curious, you know, what other initiatives we could do to turn around the outward migration. My understanding of the outward migration is that it's not so extensive. It's not as extensive as I thought. My understanding is that it's really net from the people leaving the state and the people coming in was 21,000 people are leaving the state as a net.
Is that over a year, that number?
Oh, boy. 21,000 people, sorry, I have too many papers in front of me, are leaving the state. And I wish I could, sorry, I can get on to something else, otherwise I'll trip myself up because I can't find the page. But it was, I think it was, well, let's see, they said there was about 80 people leaving the state each day. I know that was it. So I don't know over what period of time that was, and I'll find the answer. But
a year makes sense.
Over
it
a year makes sense.
It strikes me that kind of a number would want to know what the yearly migration was happening.
Yeah. So I also looked at Connecticut. So I wanted to see what is Connecticut made up of. Since we were talking about Connecticut and not just Greenwich tonight with Harry Aurora, I wanted to talk about, you know, I came back to Connecticut in 2013. And so I'm really spent most of my adult life in New York, working in New York City. And I grew up on Long Island. So I wish I knew more about Connecticut. And I figured, all right, this is my opportunity to learn.
So is your view of Connecticut basically the Fairfield County view?
I wonder
if it's more central or northern Connecticut.
Mine is definitely Fairfield County. Mm. But I've been out as far as the Mystic, and
sure.
I mean, these are all beautiful counties too. I haven't really been to northwestern Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
And
it's a racetrack up there.
It's a racetrack up there.
That's where Lime Rock is.
I used to do a radio show out of.
But the only reason I go up that way is to go to Lime Rock.
I'm curious about it, and I realize we're running short on time, but maybe one day I'd like to get more into some statistics about really what goes on here in Connecticut in terms of where we make our money, what industries are the industries that are thriving, what are some of the biggest companies that we have here. And the reason maybe I feel like doing that is because I feel like this state needs a rebranding. There's too much emphasis on, oh, it's time to leave. It is not. This is a gorgeous state. I think it needs a perspective shift. It should not be known as the land of steady
habits.
The land of steady habits, which is a good thing, but it needs a rebranding. If they could have fooled us in the 70s into thinking Virginia was for lovers and everybody bought into that, we have good things here in the state, and I really think it needs a real marketing shift. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the show tonight. Thank you, Harry Aurora, and I'll talk to you next week. This is Noreen Ehrlich signing off. Bye-bye.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
Special report, House sends impeachment articles to Senate. I'm Christopher Cruz. The U.S. House late this afternoon delivered the two articles of impeachment of President Trump to the Senate. For procedural reasons, the articles won't be formally accepted until tomorrow. Capitol Hill correspondent Phil Mattingly.
Today and tomorrow, largely ceremonial, largely procedural. The real meat and bones of this trial will begin on Tuesday. That is when the Senate is expected to debate and vote on the initial resolution laying out the ground rules for the trial.